So hi, hello and welcome again. Oliver Kim is my name and welcome to another episode of Talk Smart. Now, today in this episode, I want to talk about the so-called observer effect. And I'd like to explore the question whether we can measure anything at all absolutely accurately. So to give you an example here in front of me, I have a cup of hot water. And into this water, I put a thermometer. And I'm going to put it now into the glass, okay? And now we have to wait a little bit for this temperature reading to adjust. Now, just for you as a listener, it's a digital thermometer with a metallic probe, and you have similar thermometers to measure the inside temperature of a cake to check whether it's finished baking, for example. Now, the temperature slowly is now climbing, and it's kind of leveling off. Now, a reading of 76.2 degrees centigrade. Now I can see that it's fluctuating a little bit, and it's now, see, 76.1. And of course I have to be careful here because the temperature reading is on the side of the glass because the probe is touching the side of the cup, and the center of course is much warmer. So I'm going to stir it a little bit. Okay. I'm using the probe now to stir the water, and yeah, it's going up, and now I'm at 82.5 degrees. Yeah, of course, because the center is much warmer than the side, and yeah, that's why the temperature is going up. Now, we can agree now that we want to maybe measure the average temperature of the water, so we have to stir the water a little bit, but at the same time, this is going to, of course, also increase the cooling rate. The water is going to cool down faster, so there's the problem that we're measuring something that's continually changing, because, of course, the water is cooling down all the way to room temperature. Now, I could try to prevent this from happening by completely isolating the water from its colder environment. First, we have to, of course, also to bring up the container, the insulation container, up to the same temperature as the water. Otherwise, the container will now cool down the water. And the isolating container will then prevent the cooling of the water, but that's only going to happen if it's got the same temperature. Yeah, so we have to determine the temperature of the container as well, not just of the water. And the situation becomes even worse, or more complicated rather, because the thermometer itself also has a certain temperature. And by putting the thermometer into the water, we're already changing the temperature of the water as well. Because every measurement changes the thing that we want to measure, or let's say maybe almost every measurement. We could, of course, try to compensate this error mathematically, but for that we have to know the exact temperature of the thermometer that we're using. So we need another thermometer to measure the temperature of the first thermometer. Now, then this measurement would, of course, cause a change in the temperature of the first thermometer, just like the thermometer would change the temperature of the water, and we're just pushing the problem out, right? So this is probably one of the issues here where I'm asking myself, if this is the case, can we actually ever know the temperature of the water? Now, we could, of course, make the mass of the water quite large compared to the mass of the thermometer. And if we use a large amount of water, however, if you also use a very large thermometer, then we were not going to gain anything. And you can also imagine that if we attempt to use a very large thermometer to measure the temperature of a small drop of water, well, then, of course, the thermometer is going to influence the drop of water more than the other way around. Okay, then the drop would influence the thermometer. And this is what we call the observer effect. And when we observe something or when we measure something, we end up changing the thing that we want to measure. Yeah, and even if you try to compensate for this, then you have to do some math. Of course, that's the easy part, really. But we need a second thermometer to measure the temperature of the first thermometer. Yeah, and we're kind of pushing out the problem. Yeah, and then using the second thermometer, we're again changing now the temperature of the first thermometer. Yeah, so it's we're going kind of in cycles here. Yeah. Now, besides temperature measurement, there are other examples as well that I'd like to share with you. Well, for example, in my younger days, I used to play around with electronics a little bit, quite a lot actually, and I used to assemble radios and some kind of electronic gadgets, and I put together a whole bunch of electronic kits. And for this reason, I bought myself a nice voltmeter. Now, those voltmeter are devices that allow you to measure the voltage and current and resistance. And I liked to use those things. And there's only a problem with that. It's also an electronic device. And when I measure now the object, I want to measure the current flowing through a cable using this device, then the voltmeter or the current meter also consumed a little bit of this electricity. So it was again also changing the thing that I wanted to measure. And of course, the manufacturers, they want to try to keep this very small, but the effect still does exist. And the current measured must be substantially larger than the current that's consumed by the device. Yeah. Now, the issue starts to become really interesting when we want to measure the position or velocity of very small objects. So, for example, how do we determine the position and the speed of the movement of a quantum particle? So, for example, an electron. Remember, the electrons are those particles that go around the nucleus in an atom. And for measuring very small objects, we also need to have a very small measuring device. So we need a second particle, a light particle, or also known as a photon. And what we can do is we can use this photon as a probe, and we need to shoot this photon, this light particle, at the electron that we want to measure. In this case, it's our electron. And the photon will then interact with the electron, and the photon will be deflected. It kind of bounces off. And by measuring how it bounces off, we can gain some information about the electron. There's only a problem, okay, that the photon that we shoot at the electron now has changed also the position and movement of the electron. Yeah? So we're measuring something, but then it's not the way that it was before anymore. Yeah? The question is now, how can we measure the deflected photon? That's another thing. The photon bounces off, and now we want to measure that because we have to figure out, you know, how does it move? And you've already guessed it. We have to let it interact with another photon. Yeah? So we're again encountering a similar problem with a thermometer. We're pushing out the problem, essentially. Yeah? Now, this is actually there's actually also a practical use of this observer effect. Scientists and researchers found out that this can also be used, and it's called quantum cryptography. It's called, if you want to transmit a message from one person to another, let's say from Alice to Bob, and if somebody wants to intercept the message and read the message in between, then this message is immediately changed and modified, and then you know that somebody tried to read the message. So, because when you try to read the message, you need to measure the message, and this immediately changes the contents of the message. So, means that you then know that somebody tried to intercept the message and tried to read it. Yeah. And, the communicating parties, Alice and Bob, they are then able to know that somebody tries to listen to the communication. Now, so far I mentioned temperature, I measured currents, with a voltmeter, and I measured, talked about particles. But this observer effect is not only limited to physics. For example, also in biology and zoology, you find something similar. If you want to study behavior of wild animals in their natural environment, now, the animals will not behave naturally anymore when you try, you sit next to them and when they sense that there is somebody there, an intruder. And the more closely the researcher wants to study the animals, the closer he has to come to the animals. And something similar exists also in the social sciences. It's called the Hawthorne effect in psychology. And you try to observe a person, and the person is going to change his or her behavior. The Hawthorne effect states that the observed people will not behave naturally if they know that someone observes them. I want to give you an extreme example here. Just to make my point here. Imagine a company boss is telling his employees the following. Like, quote, today we're investigate how often you play computer games during your work time. Okay. This is an entirely scientific study. It will not impact on your salary, and please behave normally and play as frequently as always. Oh, come on. Of course, you cannot expect any meaningful outcome of this study. And even if the employees do not, have to face any negative consequences, because they're going to either play more computer games or they're going to play less, because they're now aware that they're being watched. Yeah. And I can give you also another last example. Sometimes I run diagnostic tests on my computer, and because I want to measure how the performance of my computer and how fast it goes, the memory that is used, the speed of the computer, and so on. And so I have to install a program that diagnoses my computer. However, the program also consumes some of those resources, and it slows the computer down. The program, while monitoring my computer, also changes the performance. So we're again changing the thing that we want to measure. Now, I just wonder whether we can genuinely ever know the true nature of things. But then I guess it's a question of what our measurement and the observations just have to be good enough for our purposes. When I measure my body temperature to check if I have a fever, then I'm not really worried about the fact that the cold thermometer that I put down into my armpits also cools down my body a little bit. Yeah. It gives me a slightly lower reading. But this effect you can completely ignore. Now the temperature of the water is now 71.5 degrees. Yeah. And what does this tell us? It tells us it's time for a little quote again. This one is from Johann Caspar Lavater. He's a Swiss philosopher and priest of the 17th century. And he said the following. He said, "He alone is an acute observer who can observe minutely without being observed." Okay. And now here at the end, I have a couple of questions for you. Again, some food for thought, as I like to call it. When our observations and measurements change the object being observed or measured, can we ever know the true state or of an object? Can we ever know the true nature of reality? And can a true nature of reality exist in the first place without an observer? Now, this is getting really steep now. And I'm watching now the behavior of a group of people from a distance, and they don't know that I'm watching them. Then their behavior does not change, or does it? So is it not possible to observe without changing the behavior of the observed? Now, how do we know? Or when I watch, for example, a distant star using a telescope, am I then changing the thing, the star? Probably not, because the light has already been traveling for quite a long time. Yeah, and of course it cannot go back in time. So maybe there are indeed things that maybe don't change when being observed. Well, I don't know. Okay. Well, I'll leave this up to you. I wish you all the best and see you around next time. Bye bye.